This next topic is of great interest to me because it has to do with alien abductions. And you know, they say, well, how do you know it didn't happen, this kind of thing? And do you deny that these people had a real experience? I get asked this a lot. No, I don't deny that they had a real experience. The experience was real. The question is, what does this experience represent? Something here or something out there? Well, that's what we're doing here, is to discuss what happens when things happen up here. Richard McNally is our next speaker from Harvard University, where he studies cognitive differences in university presidents. And now, he conducts research on memories. Memories are interesting. True memories, false memories, recovered memories, repressed memories, remembered memories. In fact, he's the author of Remembering Trauma. We have his book. It's a well-received book. In a way, I was a little disheartened that it came out when it did, because I thought all that stuff had finally gone away, the whole recovered memory movement and the satanic panic and all the alien abductions, all this stuff about all the legal aspects of it. I thought this had really gone down by the end of the 90s, and clearly it is not the case. And in fact, Dr. McNally has himself experienced the emotional buzzsaw of this whole industry of people that are into this whole recovered memory thing, especially with now the whole Catholic church business with the priests and all that, you know, and the latest guy convicted solely on, apparently, recovered memory. So it's still around. It's still in the courts. It's still a big factor in society, which means it's important. Richard wrote the classic article. This is my favorite, probably one of my favorite article titles I've ever seen. This was in Psychological Science, a very prestigious journal. Psychophysiological Responding During Script-Driven Imagery in People Reporting Abduction by Space Aliens. That has to be the only time the word space aliens has appeared in an academic journal. Dr. McNally received his B.S. in psychology from Wayne State and his Ph.D. in clinical psych from the University of Illinois at Chicago. He joined the Harvard faculty in 1991, where he's been ever since. His general research, actually, in addition to all this, is on phobias, post-traumatic stress disorder, application of cognitive psychology methods to elucidate information processing abnormalities in anxiety disorders, panic disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, as well as the study of memory in people reporting childhood sexual abuse. So today he's going to talk to us about all this good stuff. Please help me welcome Dr. Richard McNally.
Thank you very much for that introduction, but I think you may get me in trouble with my president. So, so for the record, I'm not conducting studies on cognitive abilities in presidents. My talk title today here is Explaining the Space Alien Abduction Phenomenon. I guess you might consider it sort of the subtitle, because it's sort of a, it's not the title, it's actually in the program, which is a more broader one, and Michael and I had talked about this, and I figured that probably given the 30-minute time frame, that what I would like to do is just focus in on the two studies we did on this particular topic. By way of introduction, several years ago, our research group was conducting a positron emission tomography study, a PET study, on women who had been sexually abused as children. There were CSA cases. We had ads in the newspaper recruiting women with these types of histories, and we would bring them in, and we would conduct psychiatric diagnostic interviews to see which of those had post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and those who did not. Now, in the course of about 7 days, 7-10 days, I had three strange experiences doing these diagnostic interviews, and they're all exactly alike. What happened is when I got to the part of the interview where I asked, when were you abused? You know, what had happened, who the perpetrator was, and so forth. In each case, the potential subject that we'd recruited said, I don't know. My first thought is that she might have misread the ad in the newspaper. That turned out not to be the case. And so then I asked as politely as I could, how is it that you responded to an ad seeking adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse, but you have no memories of ever having been abused? I said, well, that's easy. I eat too much, and I make myself throw up. My mood changes unpredictably. I have nightmares that I cannot explain. I feel tense around my stepfather. I don't know why. I must have been sexually abused and I can't remember it. So in any event, we obviously could not use these individuals in the PET study because the PET study required memories. Okay, but it did prompt a research program that my colleagues and I embarked upon where we recruited people from the community who reported believing they harbored repressed memories of childhood sexual abuse or reported recovering memories of childhood sexual abuse or said they always remembered and so forth, continuous memories. We've done a series of studies designed to test two general sorts of sets of hypotheses. In one case, we're testing hypotheses about mechanisms that ought to be operative if people can, in fact, sort of banish, if you will, memories of childhood sexual abuse and then later recall them. Or if they can form false memories of childhood sexual abuse when, in fact, these things did not happen. Now, one problem that we had in doing this research, especially on the recovered memory subjects, it was often difficult to tell whether someone had, in fact, been abused, fondled perhaps, as a child, didn't think about it for many years, and then was reminded of it later, which would be technically a recovered memory, but without repression, if you will, inaccessibility, or whether they had false memories of abuse that were not, in fact, true. We had, for example, in one of our studies, a study that caused a predictable uproar, found heightened false memory propensity in a simple cognitive psychology task in the laboratory in a woman who had reported recovering memories of childhood sexual abuse. Of course, we didn't know how many of these subjects really were abused and which ones were not. We could not corroborate any, but not corroborating them doesn't mean the memory is false. It's a very subtle problem here. So what we decided then to do is to study a group of individuals for whom we are fairly sure have false memories of trauma, false recovered memories. And let me just tell you who the we is here in terms of the studies that I'll be presenting. My collaborators, Susan Clancy, Natasha Lasko, Mark Lenzenweger, Mike Macklin, Scott Orr, Roger Pittman, and Dan Schachter. So what we did, we put an ad in the newspaper. Have you been abducted by aliens? Researchers at Harvard are seeking adults to participate in memory study, believe you've been abducted by aliens, etc., etc. For further information, please call Susan. That's Susan Clancy, who was my PhD student at the time. Now, it was very funny, because right around this time, I'm in the Department of Psychology at Harvard, but this gentleman here, John Mack, was a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. His clinic was based at Cambridge Hospital. That's a few blocks away from where I am in the psychology department, but he was in psychiatry. And it was very funny. I was telling John about this. I says, we've been studying the childhood sex abuse cases, but I figure I'm going to move into the space alien abductee business. And he said, how are you going to get your subjects? I said, put an ad in the newspaper, like I always do. And he says to me, Rich, you put an ad in the paper, and you're not going to get real experiencers, real abductees. I said, what do you mean, not real ones? And he goes, well, you're going to get people calling up in response to your ad, placing messages on your answering machine at your lab and so forth, playing jokes on you, doing things of that sort. Boy, was he right. I mean, just to give you an idea, as Michael mentioned, most of the work I've done is with panic, agoraphobia, OCD, et cetera, et cetera. These guys are different. It's a different experience. I mean, just to give you some idea before I get into the data. For example, we had this one guy. Every morning we come in, we see the light flashing on the answering machine. We got some subjects calling in. And we play the thing. It's the same guy. This went on for every day for 2 weeks. It went something like this. Talking like he's R2-D2, making like he's some kind of space alien and something. You have to erase. So we did. So Mac was right. Yeah. But we also had people who were much more sophisticated. I remember one time, we got the message blink, and this time we erase R2-D2. We get to the next message, and it goes something like this. Hello, this is Bob Wilson from Boston Chevrolet. I read your ad in the newspaper. I know you're seeking individuals who've been abducted by aliens. I've been abducted. I'd like to hear a little bit more about your memory study. So please call me at Boston Chevrolet, 555-1212. So Clancy and myself were thinking, we got ourselves a live one here, you know? And so she calls back, and the guy who answers the phone says something like this. Hi, this is Bob Wilson. Are you in the market for a car today? That's how they talk in Boston. And she says, no, I'm not in the market for a cat today. I'm responding to the message that you left on our answering machine. He goes, message? She goes, yes, you had mentioned that you've been abducted by aliens and are interested in participating in our memory study. He goes, aliens, what are you talking about? At this point, all the other salesmen at Boston Chevrolet, you know, burst out laughing as the real Bob Wilson slams down the phone. You know. So I say it's different. By the way, these are true stories. These are not Irish facts. An Irish fact is something that's not true, but would make a heck of a great story if it were true, by the way. Mac himself, of course, is the author of Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens, as I think everybody here knows. He was also the winner of the Pulitzer Prize in 1977 for his book on Lawrence of Arabia. Okay, so the first of our two studies that we did, this was directly inspired by the ambiguities with the sexual abuse study. Are people who report abduction by space aliens prone to develop false memories in the laboratory? In other words, is the same sort of general false memory propensity present in this group that also has recovered these sorts of memories? Okay, let me tell you a little bit about the subjects that we've recruited here, our quote-unquote real abductees. We did find them, so to speak. We got some referrals from Mac. We found others through the newspapers and what have you. But let me just sort of describe what they're like. You know, we asked them, how did this all begin? And they would say something like this. This is the modal subject. You know, would say, well, I was lying in bed one night on my back. A few hours before dawn, I woke up. I could see my bedroom in the semi-darkness. I went to roll over in bed, and I realized I couldn't move. I was absolutely paralyzed, totally terrified. I'm sitting there like this, my eyes open, I can't move. And then suddenly, electrical sensations start coursing through my body. I start hearing this zzzz humming sound. I see lights flashing. I begin to levitate off of the bed, and suddenly I sense a presence in the room with me. I look around because I can move my eyes even though I can't move my body, and suddenly these beings are starting coming up towards the bed. At this point, I'm scared out of my wits. I have no idea what's going on. And I wake up after some particular time later. I'm not sure how long it was. Totally baffled and terrified. Now, it turns out what this apparently is an episode of so-called sleep paralysis accompanied by hypnopompic, or upon awakening, hallucinations. Basically, what I think is going on with our folks, and they all tell us this, is that during rapid eye movement sleep, REM sleep, the stage of sleep when we do most of our dreaming, we're completely paralyzed. Of course, we don't know that because we're asleep. And it's a good thing, too, that we're paralyzed, because otherwise we might get out and act out our dreams and hurt ourselves. But in one of these episodes, which is really no more pathological than a case of the hiccups, the mental or perceptual cognitive aspects of REM become temporarily disconnected or desynchronized with the motor aspects. That is to say, the person begins to awaken, is fully aware of his surroundings, and also is aware of the fact that he's still paralyzed. Now, most people, when they have this experience, they don't say, oh, cool, a temporary desynchrony in the architecture of REM. They go, oh, my God, I'm paralyzed. I must have some neurological disease. Now, about 30% of the population will have one of these episodes every now and then, often when you are jet-lagged taking a nap during the daytime and so forth. About 5% of the population will have it accompanied by these hypnopompic upon awakening hallucinations, which is basically kind of dreaming with your eyes open. And that's what our subjects experience. Now, once they've had one of these episodes, they start talking to people and going to folks, and including certain mental health professionals in Cambridge, Massachusetts, who will go unnamed, who then help them recover memories of what happened next. Because the idea here is that the most terrifying aspects of one of these encounters is repressed or dissociated. You got to relax the person, hypnotize them, to bring forth the memories. And that is when you get these vivid recollections under hypnosis of being whisked out of the window, up into the spaceship, probed and all that sort of jazz by the aliens. So these are sort of these recovered memory sort of things. Now, when we are doing this, just for the record, this business about the sleep paralysis is not confined to our subjects. This is a phenomenon that has been reported throughout history, throughout cultures, and what have you. It seems to be sort of a common psychobiological phenomenon, and then different cultures sort of create different creatures, if you will. So, for example, in this particular painting by the Swiss-born British painter, Henry Fuseli, a late 18th century painter, early exponent of Romanticism in painting. Now, it's called The Nightmare. There's the mare right there. Now, most sleep researchers say, that's not a nightmare. That's sleep paralysis. The lady's on her back like this, and this fat little guy with the pointy ears, that's an incubus, an agent of the devil. Now, see, this is 18th century Europe, okay? So the sort of images that get hallucinated by a person going through one of these is going to be appropriate to the cultural context. So then it was the incubus. There's fascinating records from the late 17th century in Salem, Massachusetts, of individuals providing depositions against accused witches. And they say they're lying in bed, they're paralyzed, etc. And they see what they called the spectral image projected into the bedroom of the witch, who then would get hanged on that basis. But of course, nowadays, it's just aliens. Now, when we did this research, we had no idea that these guys are out here. I'm calling them the repressed memory group. These are folks who believe they've been abducted by space aliens, but they don't have any memories. Now, you're probably thinking right about now, why would somebody come to the conclusion that they've been abducted by aliens when they don't have any memories of it? Well, that thought ran through our mind, too. So we asked them, I said, well, why do you think you've been abducted by aliens? You don't have any memories. I said, well, that's easy. You see these marks? These, I suspect, are the result of alien probes. When I see pictures of E.T., I get panic attacks. Surely, this would not happen unless something happened that I can't remember. Or I wake up in the morning, twisted up like a pretzel. There's no way I could have gotten into that position without somebody doing this to me. And my personal favorite, I have a passion for reading science fiction. Explain that. So anybody in this audience who likes science fiction, now we know why. But these guys, so we asked, well, what happened to the memories? They say, well, they got pulled out of the brain by the aliens, or it happened in another dimension. That's why they can't remember it. But they're making an inference. They're a curious parallel to some of our original sexual abuse cases where they make an inference about a memory that they can't get to, based on these indicators. Now, we also recruited a group of, a control group. These are people, our control subjects are, people who deny ever having been abducted by aliens. They are... That's the main criteria. We can still find them in Cambridge today. These subjects, by the way, these are real people, not college students. So, you know, we recruit them for the community to match them on age, so it's not undergraduates or anything like this. Now, what we did in this particular study, this is a standard task for testing sort of false memory propensity in the laboratory. None of the material in this particular task have anything to do with emotion or trauma, et cetera, but it's called the Dease-Rodiger-McDermott paradigm. Basically, what happens here is the subjects hear 24 study lists that vary in terms of the number of semantic associates. I'll give you an example of this in a moment. So they study all these lists, and then they get this math problem afterwards, simple math problems, and then we ask them to recall all of the words on the list that they just saw. Then there's also a final recognition test. Now, the key thing is that for each of these lists, they all sort of converge on a theme or a gist. And there's one particular word that captures the essence of the list, but it's not actually presented. That's called the critical lure. So the question is, will the person get sort of sucked in by the gist and affirm having seen, having encountered the item that, in fact, was not presented? So this is how you sort of test kind of for a general false memory. Say, yeah, I remember seeing that. So for example, these are the type of lists that you use in DRM paradigms. So here's a bunch of words. Now, in this case, all of the words converge on a common theme. So we got here bed, rest, awake, tired, dream, wake, night, blanket, doze, slumber, snore, pillow, peace, yawn, and drowsy. And as Sherlock Holmes might have said, the dog that didn't bark in the night. The word that you'd expect to see on this list that's not there is, in fact, sleep. There you go. And so it's this type of procedure. And so when you give these people these lists, will they take the bait and get sucked in? Yeah, I saw sleep. I know I saw sleep. Okay, that's the idea. So what we have, these are the data on false recall, the average across all of the lists. Now, here's the control group, the repressed memory group. Those are the people who think they've been abducted, the recovered memory group. Basically, what you see here is you see about twice the rate of false recalls for the two groups that believe have been abducted by aliens, whether they remember it or they don't. This is for false recall. Now, when you actually take, just focus in on the 15 associate lists, like the one I just showed you, everybody tends to have a greater tendency to fall prey and say, sleep. In fact, there's somebody here, just folks did it right here. But what happens is you see, still the rate is about twice as high in the alien folks than in the control subjects who deny a history of alien abduction. Now, with false recognition, you get the same sort of pattern. With recognition tests, you tend to get higher false memory effects, and this is true here, and it's also true for the 15 associates. So basically, what we found here then is that adults reporting either repressed or recovered memories of space alien abduction exhibit heightened propensity for false memories in the laboratory. So we've gotten two different groups now that have reported this memory recovery phenomena that show this sort of a curious tendency in the laboratory. We're studying a third group later. I don't know if I'll have time to mention them, but okay. The second study, this is the one that Michael alluded to that came out fairly recently, was designed to answer the question, do alien abductees, quote-unquote, exhibit psychophysiologic signature of PTSD while listening to trauma scripts of their abduction experiences? Now, the reason why we are curious about this is that if somebody who has been traumatized, who actually has this traumatic memory, is haunted by it, who has post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and when they hear a tape that describes their autobiographical memories of trauma, they will show heightened physiologic reactivity to that memory. Now, our question was here is that we assume these guys were not actually abducted by space aliens. And so, therefore, we're asking the question, will a false memory drive a physiology hitherto attributed to the sort of a Pavlovian fear conditioning that results when somebody has been in combat and has PTSD as a result? That's kind of the general idea. Or do you really have to be abducted to show the psychophysiologic signature? Now, the procedure we used here is called a script-driven imagery paradigm. It was devised by Peter Lang to study phobia patients some years ago and then adapted for autobiographical trauma memories by my colleagues Scott Orr and Roger Pittman. Basically, what we do is follows. We get the subject to write down a narrative of their traumatic memory. In this case, the traumatic memories are their most terrifying encounters with space aliens. Now, the stressful memories that we have them write down are other very, turns out for these subjects, were quite distressing experiences. So they write these down. Then we also have autobiographical memories that are positive. They often say, like, the birth of your first child, or neutral, like doing the lawn last Saturday or washing the dishes last night, kind of boring. And so then what we do is we take these narratives and we put them into 30-second audio tape scripts, and we play the scripts back to the subjects in the laboratory while we measure their psychophysiologic responses. So we measure heart rate, how fast their heart is beating as they are listening to these different memories, because they're supposed to recall what they're hearing, right, their memories. Skin conductance response, that's sweating on the palm of the hand. And electromyographic activity, that's facial muscle tension. So the person's sitting there in the lab and they're hearing these things, grimacing and hearts pounding and they're sweating and so forth. So we're measuring that stuff. To give you an example of what these type of scripts look like from our previous work, this is from Vietnam veteran. And of course, with this script and the one I'll show you in a moment, the details are concealed, so there's no way you can identify who this person happened to be. But this is to give you the idea of what these scripts are like. It's May 1968. You're on an ambush just north of Blank when your unit encounters a divisional-sized force. As the area becomes illuminated, the enemy attacked with hand grenades. Your eyes open wide as hand-to-hand combat breaks out. You feel so frightened that your teeth cannot stop chattering. A grenade hits you in the head, and your heart begins to pound. You pick it up and throw it. The grenade explodes, wounding you. Your whole body shakes. Now, if someone has post-traumatic stress disorders as a result of Vietnam and hears this particular memory, they'll show their reactivity. And if they do not have PTSD, they'll report distress, but they won't show the physiology. Okay, Our alien abduction group, 6 women, 4 men, sleep paralysis, hypnopompic hallucinations, 8 out of the 10 had been in recovered memory sessions, which they found all sorts of wild memories. 70% of them mentioned encountering their hybrid offspring or otherwise having sex with aliens. So this is the material that comes up when they do these so-called hypnotic regressions. So when you really ask alien abductees, they start talking about their encounters. You have to be very careful about under what circumstances did you remember this? It's not as if these things are happening in the daytime or they're remembering them every day. They get abducted and they remember it right away. No, they go into these unnamed therapists who then help them remember these things. It's sort of interesting. These folks are into a lot of stuff. Tarot cards for telling the future. Oh, yeah. Astrology, bioenergy, healing therapies, alternative remedies. They believe in ghosts. And here is a key point. It really makes them very different from the CSA survivors. 90% of them also say that they are very spiritual individuals, and this plays a role in this. I mention this because when one of our studies, the first study got published, we were getting attacked by our local enemies in the New York Times who said that we are trying to silence the voices of survivors by equating, quote-unquote, space alien abductees with sexual abuse survivors. We're not doing that. As you can see, there is, in fact, some connection, but there's a big differences, of which I will cover a bit later. So I should also mention, I don't have this up here, but we also did psychiatric assessments of the subjects. John Mack has always said that these people are not quote-unquote crazy and they're not liars. I think he's absolutely correct in both cases. You find no evidence of serious mental illness here. You occasional past depression or a panic disorder in the past and what have you, but nothing that could account. You're not seeing schizophrenia, active mental illness. I think the explanation of this is more interesting. Now, our control group, these guys are a little bit less into these sorts of things. Alternative verbal memories, 42% of them believe in ghosts, Step outside the academy, there's more things out there, I tell you. At any event, what's very interesting, the physiology data tell a little bit different story from the psychometric data. I mentioned the psychiatric assessments don't reveal psychopathology. But when we see our subjects, they're doing quite well. I'm referring to the abductees. They're not anxious. They're not depressed. In fact, you can tell that they're not depressed simply by looking at their beady eyes. The Beck Depression Inventory score I'm referring to, of course, the beady eyes, is... just to be clear, you can't diagnose mood disorder by looking at a person's pupils or... Obviously, I'm referring to the BDI, of course, is you check depression, screen for depression by looking at the BDIs, and they're, of these subjects, 3.6, that is really, really low. If this were up around 21, you'd start suspecting depression. Okay, so this is, they're doing fine here. Trait anxiety, same thing, very normal, et cetera, nothing out of the ordinary. However, where you...